New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
You may wonder why we were featuring Michael Nesmith on lead vocals with a classic Monkees number called Circle Sky to introduce the latest New York Real Talk. I can only think it has something to do with the awesome talents that Pamela Sue Mann is about to introduce. Pamela, would you like to formally introduce our wonderful soul and explain the Monkees connection with Circle Sky?
Yes, we'd love to introduce the lovely Matt Keating to our show. An incredible, incredible songwriter, prolific with lyrics, great with melodies, and I've become a huge fan. So thank you, Matt, for coming on our show.
Thank you for having me. So nice to meet you guys.
Well, a genuine delight, Matt, certainly. But let's get the Monkees question out of the way first. We've launched with Circle Sky on the program today. We'll hear some of your awesome music, but how does that connect with yourself?
The name of my band, my band I was in for over 10 years up until 1989 was called Circle Sky. And we actually were Monkees fans, and we were kind of obsessed with that song. We were obsessed with the movie Head, the psychedelic element.
What's
the weird...
not to love when you actually have Davy Jones ordering a cup of soup with a hair in it? I mean, you know, these are genius routines. Jack Nicholson has never really bettered his work as co-screenwriter with respect to Head.
That's exactly, yeah. Yeah, and Frank Zappa's in it. It's like, yeah. Whoa.
There's a dandruff commercial. I mean, these are all classics of their time, really.
We have another show that Alex has started, a wonderful show called Resonance Rewind. So, Alex, is the Monkees, you know, on the menu at all?
I'm sure somewhere along the line in the infinite corridors of time and space, as Tony Newman and Doug Phillips continue to travel through past, we may well come across episodes of the Monkees or indeed Head. But that is for another time, for another scenario. We're also going to find out how connecting with Ringo Starr's publicist also led to another connection and how that also leads to a whole range of things. But Matt, You have, in the words of Time Out London, been playing your beautiful and honest songs of substance and melancholy way back since 1993, so over 30 years from this point of view. And again, according to NPR Music, you have established yourself as one of America's great under-the-radar songwriters. I've already been privileged to listen to some fantastic music that you sent over. And we launched with Circle Sky. But before we get into the meat of the interview and Pamela starts quizzing you on creativity and such like, let's talk about Nothing to Figure Out, please. That's what we're going to hear now. Would you like to explain what's behind this?
Well, this song I wrote while my wife was flying to Portland, Oregon, where she's from. And I was here in New York. She was going there. I think she was with my daughter. I'm not sure, but I was just sort of imagining her flying over the country, and I'd flown that route with her many times, and I kind of was like, oh yeah, you're doing this now, you're doing this now, you're doing this now, and it was going through a weird period of kind of confusion about my feelings about the relationship, and I kind of resolved the whole thing through by the end of the song.
Nothing to Figure Out. There we are. You did it because you'd figured it all out, clearly. Excellent.
Well, I'll let the song speak for itself, so, if you're going to play it.
Going over this morning's last goodbye. Now I'm marking your progress in the sky. Probably over Lake Michigan. From the window you're looking out. I don't care where you've been if I don't figure in. There's nothing to figure out. Come September and it's back to the old grind. The old grind is something I could leave behind. Probably over Nebraska now. How I know, well, I don't know how. I don't care where you've been if I don't figure in. There's nothing to figure out. Figuring, there's nothing to figure out.
The awesome sound of Matt Keating there with, of course, Dr. Figure Out. I'll hand over to Pamela in a few seconds, but I've got to actually clarify for our British listener, of course, you're not related to the late Karen Keating, of course, daughter of Gloria Hannaford.
I have no idea who any of those
That's
people are.
Exactly.
So I'm not
this is fine. Good answer. Okay, Pamela, over to you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I'm quite excited for Alex and Matt to meet because I know that, you know, Alex has been exposed to many, many different types of music through his various shows, but your sound, your songwriting, your voice, the whole thing, your productions, I know that Alex would really dig, because I feel like they're right up your alley, and even the connections with the Beatles are strong melodies and strong harmonies and things like this, and intelligent lyrics that really say something, which is a rarity. I'm just really excited for the two of you to be on together, because I know that Alex is chuffed to be speaking to you. You know, because I think he's now a fan of your music as well.
I'm very impressed, Pamela, that on this day when we're recording New York Real Talk of the official coronation of King Charles III, you actually use the word chuffed. How wonderfully British of you. Wonderful for New York Real Talk. It's great stuff, man.
What are you talking about?
I know, yeah, this is true. Well, I mean, the last time we actually had a monarch who had a three in the title, basically, I think it was King George, basically, and there was a different issue in terms of that. So yeah, who knows? Maybe he might actually come back to us. But let's not talk about the colonies or the former colonies at this stage.
It might work out to our benefit at this point. I'm pretty...
It's probably what Jill Biden was wanting to actually set up talks for. That's why she was over here. So there we are. Enough of such politics. Let's move to, again, the way in which you obviously developed. I mean, Pamela's absolutely right. I mean, obviously, she has eliminated herself from this routine, because she also has very intelligent lyrics and fabulous aspects and lines with respect to this whole side of things there. But one of the things we like to talk about in terms of how you've developed this whole process is the song something that you feel it comes through a muse? Is it a creative muse? Is it something that you do as a chore? Is it something you do out of love? I mean, Circle Sky, obviously, we might as well finish the story, actually. You were actually chosen by David Bowie to open for his band Tin Machine at the World in NYC. So, I mean, you know, literally, you work through a whole range of things from that perspective. Another connection, of course, with Pamela and Jerry Leonard, of course, the Bowie connection. But, you know, I'm just interested in terms of what drives you to kind of keep producing some fabulous material.
Well, you asked a lot of questions. Was it love? Was it chore? Was it? And the answer would have to be all of the above. I mean, it's. And I would say that the majority of my songs are not inspired, and they're like, I've been, you know, it's interesting you add, because I was talking to someone yesterday about AI, the whole thing now with AI, and how, you know, they're writing songs, and you can get AI to write songs for you. You can get AI to do anything. And I, you know, who knows if I'm correct about this, but here's the way I see it, is that there's information and there's inspiration. And I feel like, you know, a robot can access endless amounts of information and then combine it in different ways. And it can come out like something supposedly new. Now, the reason I have a problem with that is because that's what all my bad songs do. They basically take all this information and they combine it together. And then I listen and I go, yeah, you tried, but you failed. And I keep those songs in my shoeboxes, or now they're in the digital shoebox. And, you know, and they usually don't see the light of day. But what happens is occasionally, and I'm sure Pamela can relate to this, there are these moments.
I have a question for you after this. Yes, yes, yes.
There's these moments when you're kind of like, it's kind of taken over and it's writing itself. I hate to say that, because you have to kind of, you're writing it. But suddenly that usual mental block of, I need a word here to rhyme with this, that's gotta be this. And then you go to the thesaurus in your brain, and it suddenly that doesn't happen. And then the right word just falls out and you're like, ooh. And then you just, and you're on this, it's like you broke into another dimension. Okay, do you wanna hear my Leonard Cohen dream?
I do. And then I have a question for you, but I wanna remember my question. So Go for it. And I'm going to keep my question in mind while you tell the story. Yes.
All right. Well, I had this dream maybe a couple years ago, maybe a year ago or something, that I was going to some kind of music conference, and Leonard Cohen was dead at this point. So, but in my dream, he was alive and he was there. And I wanted to talk to him, but I was too afraid to talk to him. And years ago, I'd actually, I think one of the songs I sent you is this one, The Fruit You Can't Eat, which was me. I'd been listening to a lot of Leonard Cohen, and I kind of went into this Leonard Cohen thing, and I just felt inspired by him. And this song came out, and I felt very embarrassed that it was such an obvious ripoff of Leonard Cohen. And, but I wouldn't tell anybody because I was kind of afraid, but no one ever compared it to Leonard. And then I was like, okay. And then, but in the dream, I see him and I get the guts up to talk to him, and we're talking, and I'm like, listen, I have a confession to make. Like, I think I kind of nicked your thing, like on this song. And he said, no, you just got into the same place where I go.
That's so Leonard Cohen. He
just went through the same portal that I go through, where all the songs exist. And he said, and anybody can go there, and everybody should go there. That was the end of my dream.
That is so brilliant. That's so brilliant. Okay, so here's my question. It's not really related now, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you ever have these moments where you kind of giggle to yourself and you think, I am living my life through song?
Maybe the other way around. Like
my life is living me through song.
Everything that happened to me in my life is now working its way into a song.
Well, at least I can actually confirm, as far as I'm aware, that neither Matt nor Pamela nor myself are indeed chat generative pre-trained transformers. Although it has been said about myself, I could be hanging on to that way. Still, never mind. Let's actually listen to that particular number that you've just been speaking about. I mean, an extraordinary tale with respect to Leonard Cohen, because I was thinking I was getting a channel of that. It's The Fruit You Can't Eat. Of course, here it comes on New York Real Talk.
I've wasted days, swallowing pride by the mouthful. Whoever said that crime never pays obviously wasn't a good criminal and hasn't been put to good use. What you had mistaken for peaceful is only the sound of good and evil's uneasy truths. I've traded a day for the moments I've wasted, listening to your heart pound like a mad dancer's feet. Living sure feels like dying once you have tasted the fruit you can't
Matt, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself so far. Let's move on, if we may, to again the latest incarnation and some of the other key things that you're involved with. And again, that Ringo Starr connection. I mean, this is one of the things where I thought, okay, can we actually say that word, or should we actually just say the bees of various other side of things? No, I think we could actually clearly say that in terms of the formation of your latest band and so on, which launched, I think, back in 2014. The Bastards of Fine Arts, 2016, I should say, with Jason Mercer, Greg Wieczorek, of course, Steve Mayone, etc. How did that relate to Ringo Starr and his agent?
Well, it's funny. I don't know where, God, you really dug that up, because I don't even think we had that out there, but... maybe I mentioned the interview. So we're mutual friends of her publicist, and she has a regular, this woman, Elizabeth Freund, and she has a regular like kind of a dinner party where she invites people she knows to kind of meet and kind of like-minded artistic people to kind of network and kind of connect. And I went and there was this guy, we were all kind of introducing ourselves, and there was this one guy, Steve Mayone, and we just kind of like heard each other, and we just started making small talk after the meeting, after the dinner. And then I kind of said, I had just been playing with someone. He was from Boston and I used to live in Boston. And recently I've been playing with another guitarist named Alan Devine in Boston. And I just kind of said, do you know Alan Devine? And he was like, I play in a band with him. And I was like, oh, and it was actually a Beatle cover band. So it was like this kind of weird kind of thing that, coincidence, and we kind of exchanged numbers, and then we just kind of stayed in touch peripherally in New York for maybe a year or so, and then we just kind of like, I think one gig of mine he came to, and we talked about getting together and trying to, you know, play some music and write, and we really like got together, and it was one of those weird things where everything he would just play the right part, and then we would just sing in the right places, and then everything we would play each other seemed to have a kind of a, we have different qualities, but our music, our songs, the way we approach songwriting kind of interlocks in a really nice complementary way. And I've been in that band Circle Sky up till 89. And then I'd spent pretty much like, you know, 89, 99, it was like 25 years on my own touring, you know, alone, like being the solo guy. And I was kind of sick of it, like, cause it was just lonely. And you know, I mean, I would have bands with me sometimes, but a lot of times I was alone. And I guess I was just looking to try to do something a little more collaborative. And we just kind of hit it off. And then the rest of the guys were kind of already in my solo band. And then and now we've become more of kind of like a duo lately because our bass player moved back to Canada where he was from.
And typical Canadians, you can't rely on them. They'll sort of as soon as they get to the routine, they'll cross the border again up to the maple line.
Well, there was a pandemic that made it so people couldn't cross the border. So that's
yeah.
So are you going to be playing any shows in New York anytime soon?
We're playing this weekend in Boston, May 13th at the Lizard Lounge. And then
the Lizard Lounge, it's great. Yeah.
And we're playing June 24th at the Rockwood Music Hall.
June 24th?
Yes.
Rockwood 3 or Rockwood 1 or Rockwood 2?
Rockwood 1. Rockwood 1. And then we're playing, and then I'm having my 60th birthday party music bash on August 1st at the 11th Street Bar, which is kind of our home away from home. That's where we had a residency there for a couple of years, and we played there pretty regularly. So we're playing there August 1st.
Ooh, We spoke about the Monkees, we spoke about the Beatles. I got to ask the question, do you have a favorite Beatles song, Matt, you'd like us to dig out for you?
A favorite Beatles song, that's really hard because... I mean, like, they're all my favorite, but like, even the bad ones, I think the reason the Beatles are so great is not because of their good songs, because of their bad ones. That's my personal theory.
Okay, what's your favorite bad song?
My favorite bad Beatles song. I don't know. I don't want to call a Beatles song bad, but I'm trying to think of what my favorite bad Beatles song is. Well, John Lennon always hated Run for Your Life, and I think that's a great song, even though it's very politically incorrect right now, I'm trying to think I'd have to think about that, but I guess I would go back to Across the Universe is probably my favorite Beatles song, probably because
Nothing's going to change our world. Kai Karoo, etc. So it goes.
That's right. And I think it had something to do with the fact that this, like I talked about, the place where the songs come from. That
words are swimming around like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly and they slip away across the universe. These are important things.
That's right. And he was actually singing about his wife was talking endlessly and was annoying him. And that's what inspired the song.
Oh my God, I did not know that. I love that. But I want to go to that place too. I mean, is there, so everybody can go there? There's no cap on the amount of people.
Pamela, maybe we already are there.
I think we're there right now.
Yeah.
Let's write a song.
I think that everyone can, unfortunately, it's sort of like everyone can run a under 4 minute mile, but you got to like run a lot before you get there.
Are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Across the universe, float me under like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world.
exciting and inviting me. Limitless undying love which shines around me like a million suns. It calls me on and on across the universe.
Talking about, I think that the interesting thing is, at least in my experience, I think I spent my obnoxious 20s trying to be clever. I had these weird, I just loved words, interesting words, and I just wanted to.
It's a great song by the Monkees, of course. Words have to be some one of those classics. Maybe we should play it, Matt.
Yeah.
See you smile.
You're so bad, cause when I see you I start trying.
Everything to stop, but there's no denying.
In love with you, girl, is just like dying.
Your lyrics, but at that point, hopefully, you're becoming so much wiser, so that these more seemingly simplistic words happen more and more as you become wiser. So you don't need to use all the clever, bizarre words that nobody would ever dare to use in a song. You know, it's almost like that kind of thing happening. I don't know if you've experienced.
Yeah, I totally get it. Like, although for me, I actually listened back to some of the first songs I wrote, and they were kind of naively good in that I did things that just were kind of naturally good. I once read an interview with John Prine, and they were like, I think it was John Hyatt was interviewing him. He said, what was the first song you wrote? And he was like, Sam Stone. And the guy was like, what? That's like his best song. And he was like, that was the first song you wrote? Like, and I think...
So you didn't get in your own way. You just let it out.
Yeah, I think maybe there is like a beginner's luck or something. And then you kind of have to go through this whole brutal thing where you...
Sometimes, Matt, you're playing golf, you get a hole in one. See the way I segue to Bastards of Fine Arts there. Would you like to introduce Hole in One for us, please?
Yeah, this is a song about when I was feeling particularly apocalyptic. And it seemed like everyone was just playing golf. So I put the two together.
And there we are, presumably actually focusing on the golf courses that a certain ex-president of the United States used to actually run in Scotland. But let's not talk about that and the apocalypse. Pamela Sue Mann, it's time on New York Real Talk to ask Matt about wacky New York moments.
I was just thinking about that because to ask someone who has spent so very much time living and being in New York City about their wacky New York moment, that's really so... It's almost like, okay, tell us the most bizarre thing that's ever happened to you, because it probably was in New York. So I think we'll go with that. So the whole idea of New York being on these, and I don't know if this is true, ley lines or some kind of weird geographical location that strange things happen. Everyone I know that spend any time in New York or even visited here, there's always some bizarre thing that happens when they're in New York, you know? So, okay. Is there, while you were in the New York or the five boroughs somewhere, a moment that you'd like to share with us that was just so, like, beyond the norm, just off the charts?
Well, wacky. Everything, I mean, New York is so weird, because first of all, you see celebrities all the time, you know, which you don't, like, I just had one today, actually, like, I was walking down the street, and I saw this kind of elderly Indian man with kind of dressed a little hippie-wise, and I'm far off, and I went, that looks like Deepak Chopra. And then this voice in my head went, yeah, right, Matt. You see an elderly Indian man dressed a little hippie, and he's got to be Deepak Chopra. And then I keep walking, and I'm like, it's Deepak Chopra.
Did you say hi?
I did, sort of. But then, like, I really regret it. I wanted to get back and talk to him and say, like, could you help me get back into the alternate reality, dude? Because yeah, this one.
He might have been saying at this very moment in time. He might well be saying, "Do you know? I think I might have seen Matt Keating today. I wish I'd said something to him."
I'm sure. Well, you know, in the Beatle connection. I was listening to an interview with him recently, and he was, you know, I guess he was friends with George Harrison. They were pretty close.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, George was always in with a lot of, like,
yeah.
I met Ravi Shankar, which right after George died, and I worked a show that he was on, and I remember I just said, because my first concert was actually George Harrison, Ravi Shankar, and Billy Preston in the Boston Garden in 1974, when I was
so
like,
the B-listers then, Matt, presumably.
What's that?
The B-listers, you know, you were just sort of you were lifting the tone. Very good.
I told him, I said, you were the first concert I ever saw. It was you. And I said, with George Harrison. And then he just, this little tear, he said, he was my very good friend. And it was very moving. It was very moving.
Aw. Well, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
You made him sad, though.
What?
You made him sad.
I felt bad. I felt guilty. I'm like, I brought up his dead friend, and he was like, thanks, dude. You know, I'm like, I'm sorry.
I'm leaving now.
Yeah. Leaving now. I'm over here. But no, I've had so many weird New York moments. I mean, through the pandemic, I was walking through Washington Square Park and some guy punched me. I mean, just randomly. So, you know, but I'm trying to think of, the really crazy stories probably don't have time to fit on your podcast.
Well, that leads to our two questions, which I don't think it's time to ask yet.
No, we've still got a few moments, Pamela. We haven't actually gone through the transcendental phase of me. I'll alert you when we actually arrive there, so we can take it onto another line entirely, if you wish.
Yeah, I think, did you ever think about doing anything else besides music? Or was it just never, nah, I mean, you know, people have side jobs. They have jobs yeah. that they use for cash. But I mean, another career, another vocation, another calling.
Well, me and my dad, who unfortunately passed 2 years ago, we had kind of a running joke, because when I was a teenager, he's like, well, so what are you going to do when you grow up?
No.
And I was like, I'm going to be a musician. And he's like, okay, but you need a backup plan. And I'm like, I have one. And he's like, what is it? I said, poet. And he was like, stick with the music. So
parents are very difficult to bring into the world, Matt. I've said this for years. You know, it's a constant line that's actually there.
But I've done a lot of different things for money. But like in terms of, I guess when I was a little kid, I thought of being an actor, maybe a writer. You know, I was always an artistic. I always had an artistic.
You have a great voice. You should do voiceovers. Well, you probably have. Have you done voiceover work?
No, someone asked me to do one once, and I have. You know, it's funny you said, like, because I once, when I was really hard up at a certain point in my life, I think it was when my record label, like, went bust, and I'd been signed for, like, many years, and I was like, and my daughter had been born, and my honey, and like, so I knew this guy who was the son of a very famous actor, and I won't say who, but, like, and he was like, and he was doing voiceover, and he's like, you know, yeah, I could go out to lunch with you and show you the road, tell you what to do. But the way he laid it out, it sounded really intense. Like it sounded really like, you know, when it's always happened, whenever I thought of doing other things, I've realized that I would have to, like, to get as good at those things as I am at music, I would have to start at the beginning again with something else. And I'd be like, well, I've already kind of done a lot of this work right here now. And so I also teach music as well privately to a lot of people and help them with their songwriting and produce. And so I have a business doing that. So that's, you know, but it feels part of the same thing. Like I'm involved in the art of the song and the part.
Well, and also, I mean, if you think you've gotten to a certain point where you're giving back, because yeah. you've figured out a lot along the way on your own. And now there really are so many guides for people that weren't there. Even, you know, like when I went to music school, there was no songwriting department, which is probably really good, but now there is, you know.
Yeah. Well, now they have like a networking department, like, you know, right? They have like how to like do social media 101, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, right?
What I think is funny, actually, this is something different, but I have been taking my daughter around to different colleges because she's a junior and this is the time you do this. So we went to Emerson College in Boston, and this year they have a new major, and I was so excited by this, and I had this little fantasy that I could go and study this major. It's comedy. You can go get your BFA in comedy at Emerson College, which is so crazy. I just think it's insane. But back to the point.
It's a serious business, comedy, Pamela. It's serious business.
It's true. I run into Louis C.K. all the time in my neighborhood. And so.
You're giving back, and it's the time. And I see with really gifted people that I know that have worked really hard, because you don't just get there, you know, you really have to put the time in and work. And going back to Leonard Cohen, I mean, he would roll up his sleeves and go to work every day. You are giving back, which is so amazing, because you've got this gift and you're not just keeping it for yourself. You're sharing things that you've learned, hacks or things that you've learned along the way, and can help guide others. And it doesn't that feel really good?
It does. I get a lot of that. I also teach like instrument, like piano and guitar and stuff. And I think what it is that most people need, this is going to sound so like trite, but like people just need encouragement, because there's so many forces of discouragement in the world. And then I find that people just, if you actually encourage them, it's kind of amazing what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by the title of your studio, Janglewood. Initially, I thought, is he referencing Mr. Bojangles, of course, or are we talking Mr. Tambourine Man? Is it a mixture of jangles in that particular jingle jangle way in which we'll follow the Tambourine Man, or are you going to Mr. Joe Jangles, or is it neither of the above, Matt?
You know, there's a story to that, and I'll tell you, and what it is, number one is the music I play, not the only music I play, but for a while I've been very involved in what is referred to as jangle rock, and it's kind of like,
as opposed to jungle rock, which was a Hank Mizell number from 1960s.
Jangle rock is like, has its roots in like the Birds, and which influenced the Beatles, and like the Tom Petty and like that whole kind of thing. But where it came from was, it's a home studio and I record people's records there and stuff, but I'm so horrible. Like I don't have an engineer. I do everything. And I'm completely disheveled because I'm a songwriter and all of the cables are always tangled. So I was joking that I should call my studio Tanglewood, which there is a place in Massachusetts called Tanglewood, famous classical music place. And so I should call it Tanglewood. And then out of the blue, I just said, or Janglewood. And that's where it is.
Nomenclature, so it's a difficult thing to work through.
Or Bollywood, Janglewood. It's great.
I think it's a great, I want, one of these days I'll make t-shirts.
You should.
I should.
Suitable motivational quotes on them, no doubt. And we'll get Mike Dooley in Florida to actually promote them, which I'm sure he will. Matt, how did you encounter Pamela for the first time? What was your, because that's often a story that we find is quite amazing.
Knocking on his door, the stranger kept knocking and knocking and knocking. And, you know, he used a little flap as you do in New York City. And he's like, she needs to just stop knocking. Maybe if I just ignore her, she will go away. And it didn't work. He had to open the door and I was there and I said, well, you know, you should come on New York Real Talk. And he's like,
It's a classic line, knock and the door shall be opened unto you. So, you know, seek and you shall find. Very important.
Yeah.
But I take it, Matt, you haven't had to take a legal restraining order out. I mean, I think we can vouch for her character. She is okay.
No, we're good. No, it was actually a mutual friend who she was talking to, who is kind of a big fan of my music, kind of recommend. I don't know, just recommended me to her. And then she checked it out. And then we talked and it kind of came together.
It's just like George Harrison's publicist all over again. So are you going to be coming over to the UK? Have you got any Europe gigs planned? Or is it a case of, no, I'm staying in this country?
No, I've toured England. I've toured Europe. I had my record come out on Alan McGee's label, Fruits from Scotland. So I've done a lot of touring over there and I would love to. And that was my plan with Steve, with our Bastards of Fine Arts band. But then the pandemic hit, like right as and it was just sort of like, how are we ever going to go anywhere or do anything? So, and it does require, we're both like, you know, he has small children and I'm, you know, we're not spring chickens but it's something I aspire to do. I always was playing London every couple of years over the last years, and I would love to be back there. Unfortunately, some of the venues I used to play are not there anymore, so that's sad. But I'm seeing a good friend of mine who was from London, who I used to stay with, who moved back to Liverpool, where he's from, and I'm seeing him tomorrow for breakfast tomorrow, so maybe I'll hit him up and I'll be like, okay, dude, help me figure this out.
Exactly. So it's all important. And in terms of the socials, you presumably are on the usual Twitter, Facebook and such like. Have you gone down the line of TikTok, or is that a case of, no, I leave that for different souls entirely to actually start doing their TikTok routines?
Yeah, but you know,
I went on TikTok.
Yeah.
And I kind of couldn't get it.
Yeah. I know. My daughter does not. She's like, Mom, you're not allowed on TikTok.
I didn't get it, but I did put up some things. And then at a certain point, because I have an old iPhone 8, and I was like, and I keep, because I have this app that is for songs, and it's like, they discontinued it. So it's using up all this space. And then it said, like, I couldn't access it anymore. And I didn't want to get a new phone because I would lose the app that I'm using. So I was like, I have to get rid of some storage. And then I looked and I went, oh my God, it had the top number one uses of my space, and it was like TikTok. And I was like, well, screw you. So I deleted TikTok, but I just put it back like about a week ago. But I haven't done anything. So it's just, it's too crazy.
Look at it, Matt, as being able to provide our Chinese friends with as much information they'd like to harvest about us as possible. So all good on that side of things, or maybe not. Pamela, we've reached that time where we need to ask the last two questions. Over to you.
Yes, I will, but I must say something first. You know, I was alarmed to talk to someone in radio, a friend of mine in England, who basically was saying, we were talking about this one particular song of mine, and he was basically saying, well, you know, pop songs could be 1:30 now. Now, we used to try hard to get them under 4 minutes or like 3 minutes, 23 seconds. That was some golden moment of time that the song should be to get it on radio. But he was telling me, he was like 1 minute 32 or one something like that.
And attention spans vary. They can rapidly sort of decrease. People move on and click to the next phase.
Exactly. He said it was TikTok. And then I thought about it and I thought, you know what? Do I want to contribute to continually decreasing the attention span of the average person? You know, average person being me? Like, no. So I didn't even bother going on TikTok. It scares me. And my daughter says I'm not allowed to do that.
But which is a conspiracy to only release songs over 10 minutes long.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's collaborate. And every song will be 20 minutes.
I can sense that the Pink Floyd nature coming out in life. And it's a return to progressive rock where the track just goes on forevermore, which is wondrous. Pamela, let's go for those last two interrogatives.
So, number one, have you had a nice time with us? And number two, will you come back soon?
Oh, definitely. I've had a great time. You both are wonderful interviewers, and I feel like I just had a fun time. And anytime you like.
You're really fun. Isn't he fun, Alex?
Absolutely. And these days, as James Gordon has actually left the United States, I think we obviously need to fill that gap. I think Matt should obviously take over the James Gordon line as well, together with yourself, clearly. I'll just add to my ChatGPT person to the whole thing, and we'll take something on a different line entirely. Pamela, what is New York home of?
New York is home of the world's finest pickle.
Keep looking for the fairway, but the green has turned to brown. I tried to do it their way, hey, but that's not the only game in town. I thought I heard a hand clap. I guess I'm not the only one to wind up in the sand trap, who thought he hit a hole in one. It was a real nice day in Pompeii, right before the eruption. Clouds of ash float and crash along the promenade, blotting out the sun. My fingers in the socket, I keep a fooling with the pun. My hands inside my pocket, I think I found a hole in one. Everyone's a long shot, 100 million to 1. My heart's been in the pawn shop, between guitars and guns. Nine irons in the fire, only one can be what I desire. It's just a shadow wave. Sit down.